From your first moment as an Alliance Protectorate, we will provide the means for you to travel to anywhere in the Alliance. As I noted, we will control these means, but your use of them will be at your pleasure, without hesitation or limitation. As well, we will provide any sort of technical assistance in developing your own space program that does not involve concepts new to your science. We will offer aid in refining rocket propulsion, and provide new chemical fuels, but until, or if, you advance to Alliance Associate, nothing such as gravitic drive can be supplied. Once you attain that second level, we will of course then transfer the knowledge required for you to manufacture and maintain our transportation methods. Although I said if you achieve the associate status, I personally do not doubt it for an instant. I am certain that the awesome thrill of being able to travel at will throughout the galaxy will prove so irresistible to you that you would do anything, even make peace amongst yourselves, to preserve it. The benefits of joining the EU are not limited to space. Most of the improvements will be on Earth itself. As an associate, you will receive our fusion power technology, to free you forever from the limitations of fossil fuel and fission energy. We will also make available the ability to create antimatter for ME power systems in the spacecrafts that you will no doubt prefer to build for your own use. We are well aware of your passion for doing it yourself, and you are a remarkably creative and versatile race when it comes to inventing and adapting things to meet your needs. We of the Alliance find this a valuable trait in people, and even if you had no other saving graces, for this reason alone you would be welcomed into our numbers. In the medical field, we can offer advances in treatments that would render surgery all but obsolete, and in those few instances where it is unavoidable, our surgical procedures quite frankly render your best techniques little better than medieval bloodletting. Major diseases are unknown to us, and our physiology is considerably different from yours. We therefore have no immediate cures for your killer diseases. However, by working with your research professionals, and providing the necessary computer programming, we can easily give you the capacity to cure and to prevent these diseases. We would like nothing more than to give your people the means to achieve perfect health. As an associate of the Alliance, you will have it. Speaking of computers, although you have made spectacular advances in this science, there are fundamental principles that you have yet to learn. We will teach them. To list just a few, I sense neurosynaptic logic that duplicates the thinking and reasoning processes of the human brain. I sense molecular level integration made possible by room temperature superconductors, offering computing speed increases by a factor of at least 10,000 over your best existing technologies. I sense true parallel processing that your computer science is beginning to explore, but which is still decades in your future at your present rate of progress. In the communications field, I sense a planet-wide implant network that allows interface with a vast array of information resources, and instant, free contact with any other person. I sense link up with every Alliance visor screen system, providing a window into the universe on almost a million channels, and the ability to study the cultures of people very much like yourselves, and others entirely alien to you. I sense access to the prodigious UWA databases that store the combined knowledge of the entire Alliance, often reaching back many thousands of years. You may believe that you have very good communications, but you have only scratched the surface. Let us show you all that you have been missing. In the artistic and cultural pursuits, we will share our concepts of beauty and expression with you. And of course your own artists will be welcome to join in this exchange. We have art enough to occupy one for 1,000 lifetimes, and we would be privileged to add your world's efforts to that great diversity. There are so many more areas of interest that I could discuss that it would be no effort to extend this well beyond the limits of the computer that Bob Renaud uses to convert it to your technology. Let me therefore conclude by indicating what we expect of our member planets in return for the many benefits we provide. Our principal requirement is that an Alliance world must contribute to the good of the whole. Each planet has qualities and capabilities that make it an invaluable member of the UWA. However, we do not expect a world to sacrifice in order to meet the needs of the Alliance. We require no gifts. Rather, we operate on the ancient and honorable system of free commerce, of economic incentive, of profit, a dirty word in the lexicon of some of Earth's politically extreme viewpoints, but an eminently effective motivation. We of the UA believe that a world that provides a service or a product should be fairly recompensed. Earth has much of great value to us, and we will make it well worth your while to become an active partner in Alliance business. One trait of your people that we find especially important is your innate capacity for leadership and instinctive decision-making. Over the years, we have many times witnessed this ability in action. You are, in your own words, born leaders. Our many centuries of peace have rendered us quite frankly unprepared for the military way of life that has been forced upon us within the last 30 years by Kalron and Omegan initiatives against the Alliance. Yes, we have our military people, and they do their very best, which is quite good, but we would far prefer to enlist your aid as leaders and planners and tacticians. You seem to be uniquely adept at these tasks, and applied to Alliance needs instead of against each other, your talents would be a highly prized addition to our capabilities. Beyond this, as I stated earlier, your inventiveness and ingenuity would certainly be enormous assets to us. We are constantly amazed at the rate of progress that you have maintained in this century, far beyond our wildest anticipations. Sadly, however, your morality and spiritual life have not only failed to keep pace with your scientific and materialistic progress, but indeed have suffered to the point of stagnation, if not of imminent collapse. This is in part due to the dark forces, but much of it is directly attributable to your misguided concept that in becoming scientifically astute, you have eliminated your need for God and His eternal word. I have discussed this previously, and will not dwell on it here. However, to become a member of the UA, you must acknowledge that your greatness is due to the beneficence of God, and not to your own labors without His guidance. You have many talents, many things to offer the Alliance, and we in turn will provide much of inestimable value to you. We would be honored to count you amongst our member worlds, but we hold that in the end, all of our mighty works, all of our blessings, everything that we cherish, we owe to our loving and providing Infinite One, our God. If you cannot bring yourselves to return to that faith of your forebears, then sadly we must leave you to your own inevitable moral self-destruction. In this, we can only watch and pray that God grants you the wisdom to see the folly of your ways before you can no longer turn back. You are at a bridge in humanity's life, my friends. If you cross it, naught lies ahead but moral desolation, without end or hope. We will erect the warning signs at that bridge, but you alone can read and heed them, and in enlightenment turn back toward the road that leads you to a world of love and spirituality, of living by God's laws. When you make that choice, you will see the open arms of God, eagerly waiting to embrace you, His prodigal sons, His lost children coming home once more. Behind Him, you will see us, offering you a way of life to fulfill your dreams of destiny. With these words, I bring to a close this first series of messages to you, my brothers and sisters of Earth. I hope that in these 9 discourses, I have given you perhaps a smile, perhaps a tear. More than that, however, I hope that I have given you pause to think of yourself, your people and your world as vitally important in the vastness of God's wonderful universe. If I have done this, then I am well satisfied. Valus in onol siona. Go in light until next we meet. I am RKI. May peace be yours. An afterword from Bob Renaud. My intention is to make this short because there's little that I can think of to say to properly follow RK's messages. However, as RK said, don't be surprised if it has been my profound honor to work with this marvelous gentleman in the preparation of this first series of communications. More than once, I have found myself reading his words as they scrolled across my monitor, and feeling anguish for what we have become in our misguided quest for freedom. Perhaps it requires the views and perceptions of an outside observer to swing the 2x4 at our heads, to wake us up before it's too late. In my capacity as the recorder and processor of his messages, I've been given many offline conferences with RK, communications that will never be made public, but which offer deep insight into the workings of his mind and soul and spirit. Rest assured that the concern that you read in his writings is genuine, that his toughness and frankness come not from any attitude of superiority, but from his commitment to assist us in lifting ourselves out of the moral pit that we are digging by our errors. RK, the Kurandians and the Alliance are here because they care. We are where they once were many centuries ago, and they know what it will take to leave our immaturity behind. We are a haughty race, we humans of Earth, and one thing we don't like is advice from others, no matter that it's in our best interest. How much more so are we going to reject the wisdom and teachings from people of other worlds and star systems? Yet, in them we are seeing what we can become. When we realize that we're not the quintessence of creation, but rather just one race of beings out of multiple millions throughout God's vast house of many mansions, we can begin to grow in understanding of our real destiny in the universe. These wonderful people, every bit as human as we are, have transcended the difficulties we now face, and want to share with us the path they followed in attaining a life of love and light. The secret to their success is no secret at all. The Alliance, and the Confederation, live by God's laws, and they apply them rather than fighting or rejecting them. By so doing, they reap the benefits that God bestows upon his faithful children. 20 centuries ago, in another time of darkness and evil, a visitor from beyond our world came here to teach those who would listen. His words were spurned, and he was abused and finally put to death for his heresies against the established philosophies. As time passed, the teachings of Jesus spread, and became the foundation for modern civilization. Let us now start anew the journey into light that began so long ago. Let us now follow God's laws into a glorious future in the brotherhood of all worlds. I must offer an olive branch to those whose confederation links might have caused them to take issue with the apparent harshness of the treatment given them in these communications. The controversy that divides the Alliance and the Confederation is due to means, not ends. The goals of the two organizations are very much alike. However, the approach taken by the UWA on Earth has created the formal rift between the governing powers that RK mentioned on several occasions. This divergence does not affect informal relations between the people. Their social and personal lives go on without interruption, and many groups have formed on both sides to plead for an end to this high-level discord. A few moments before I began this addendum, I conferred with RK to verify a few points that I wanted to make. In answer to my question on this subject, he said that although the two groups do not and probably will not see eye to eye on alliance activities on Earth, movement toward reconciliation at the highest levels is underway. The motivation for this is simple, and RK and I have spoken of it, the awesome, irresistible power of the laws of God. Both sides are listening to the holy truths that govern us all. Where man alone fails, man with God succeeds. In one of his messages, RK suggested that I provide in this piece a brief description of the Kurandian physiology. For this, I'm simply going to splice in a segment from the transcript of my tour of the Plato Kim Luna base in July of 1987, concerning this very subject. The text refers to my seeing the Kurandian form on a base of screen for the first time. It's slightly edited to fit this format, but true to the original. The he in the text is one of my Kurandian associates, a member of the original team that first came to me in 1961. His name is Orival, and a finer person you'll not soon find here or anywhere else, despite his occasional well-timed jibe if he feels that things are getting a bit too emotional or sentimental, but that's another story. This is your new Kurandian body as of your last replica visit to our lovely little world. So, what do you think? He looked over at me, and apparently noticed my stunned expression, because he leaned back in the seat and just smiled. I studied that image for a long time. He was right. It was ugly. It was expectedly short, although Ori told me it was somewhat taller than the average, and solidly constructed for their gravity, which is 3.2 times that of Earth. The eyes were about the same size ratio to the head as ours, and placed at about the same location on the face. They were deep blue, almost indigo, with smaller pupils because of Kaina's light being about 1/6 brighter at the Corundian surface than our sun's on Earth. There were no discernible eyebrows, or in fact any hair at all. The skull structure over the eyes protruded more than a Terran's, perhaps to shade the eyes from overhead sunlight. The ears were smaller in relation to the head than ours, lobeless and distinctly peaked at the top. They were pressed almost flat against the head. The nose was small, with slit nostrils. The mouth was slit-like, with lips that were less pronounced than ours, and slightly narrower in proportion to the jaw. It was curled upward in what on Corundum must pass for a smile. The head was rounded, with a larger cranial cavity, comparatively, than a Terran's, with concavity in the cheeks that started at the lower jaw and ended in front of the ears. The neck was thick and sinewy, again an effect of higher gravity. The torso was compact and powerfully muscular. The arms and legs were at about the same ratio of length to body height as ours, but were heavier and very well developed. The hands were proportionate to ours, but with slightly longer fingers and a discernible webbing between the thumb and the rest of the hand. As with the rest of the body, it appeared to be quite strong. The skin was very smooth. It was what we would call white in color, but with a tanned appearance not unlike what one would see on any California beach. All in all, the alienness of the body was alarming. It was obviously a product of an environment vastly different from our own. By any Terran standards, it was thoroughly uncomely. I'll grant that it's a heck of a way to talk about oneself, but from the Terran point of view, the Corundian is genuinely unlovely. Of course, as RK also mentioned, I found my Terran body equally disconcerting while I was in their form, so there's much to be said about beauty being only skin deep, and in the eye of the beholder. Returning to these computerized messages, RK has outlined a new series that he is working on for later transmission. In these communications, he will respond to several questions that I asked during the course of preparing this opening set. He has also offered to reply on a personal, albeit quite limited, basis to questions from readers, and at a later time to use one or more messages to respond to a number of queries from New Agers via this computerized format. Both of us would appreciate your comments, suggestions for future messages and so on to the glory of God and the great work of the Alliance. However, it is necessary that I respectfully decline visits, telephone calls and personal appearances. The time is not available for these things, and I must request that the readers agree to this. The written word is to remain my only medium of communication. In closing, I hope with RK that you have found much of interest, and much to provoke thought, in his 9 messages. We thank you for your most valuable time, and we would be honored to serve you again in the future. May God abundantly bless you and yours, and may you feel his presence in your life. May you know the serenity of his love and the peace of his strength. Believe in him and his words, accept him as your father, heed the teachings of Jesus, and you will find the peace that only God can give. Farewell. Index of RK Communications, Series 2. The messages in Series 2 were received in May through July of 1989. They continue the introduction to Corunda and its people, and deal further with matters on our own world. Next is, date of reception, the 2nd of May 1989, questions and answers. Love and light, my Terran friends. Welcome to the opener in this second series of messages, lessons or whatever you might elect to call them. It seems appropriate at this time to respond to a number of questions that have been posed to me over the months since I became involved in this work. Let me preface this second series by making a short observation on the Alliance's intentions and how these messages relate to this program. Those of you who have the first series know what the U was not. We offer no promises to descend from the heavens in a multitude of ships to save mankind from their own errors and undoing. Whatever is the intention of the Confederation, the Ashtar Command and the others that have made statements of that sort. The UWA is not involved in those matters. Our task here is not to gather a select few to be evacuated out of danger, but rather to work in your society to eliminate the problems that might cause such a catastrophe. My communications will reflect our orientation to the physical aspects of life, with proper attention to God's laws as they apply to the universe. The Alliance has a spiritual foundation, but our work is in the here and now. You will not find here the typical concentration on vibrations, energies, crystals and the other elements of the channeled teachings. This is not to say that we disapprove of them or challenge the validity of that approach, but only that we do things differently. We believe that there is room in the New Age for many diverse methods of attaining peace. Ours is to make it happen by working within the societal infrastructures of those worlds that we find worthy candidates for membership. If your interest is in the etheric realms, in meditation, in metaphysics or so on, then we heartily approve of your efforts. We must, however, advise you that you will have to seek them elsewhere. And now, let me begin this evening's session. Question 1. A question that you have raised deals with our names. In many instances one finds a commonality in our way of naming ourselves no matter what worlds we call home. Often it is a single, hyphenated name, such as Astralary or Orival. Are these our actual names? Do we use names in the same way as you of Earth? Speaking now of the Alliance, we do not rely on names to the extent that you do. For example, we do not use them in any form of official identification. At birth, every Alliance citizen is assigned a Universal Economics ID code, equivalent in function to your social security numbers. The UNICode is our lifelong method of identification. It is also the security code transmitted by our implants. Names are primarily for those uses where the absolute accuracy of the UNICode is not required. This is very like Earth, where there may be many who are called John Smith or Mary Jones, which on a large scale can obviously lead to confusion of a high order. The names that we employ in our communications with you are phonetic equivalents. My Carindian name is thus an approximation of Dilintrava. As well, although we seldom use them on other worlds, we all have family or lineage names, surnames, if you will. Mine is Mirak, Orival's is Dinora, Astralary is of the lineage of Sitar, and so forth. We seldom find a need to use them in contacting you, because there is little chance of names being duplicated in that capacity. However, masters are always known by their full names as a distinction or sign of station. Thus there is the Master Kalen Lee written amongst those of the Carindian team. To distinguish between masters and the high or elder masters, the latter use capitalized surnames. You will note in Bob's 1960s contact report, Kalen Lee's surname was not capitalized. This is because he was elevated to the stature of Elder Master in the mid-1970s. In answer to a question that may well arise, there are fully as many women as men who have attained the most honorable status of Master. Amongst us, there is no feminist movement. We have never entertained the peculiar notion that one's gender is a cause for differentiation or bias. We simply know that we are all humans, and live that philosophy. Thus, Master is the proper designation for men and women alike, without the merest thought of it being a sexist word. Question 2. The next question: are there any truly non-human races in the Alliance? This depends entirely on one's conception of non-human. If by this is meant species that are physically unlike the customary humanoid form, then the answer is definitely yes. Many such races are long-time members of our group, yet are so unlike us in their appearance that in some instances one might fail to recognize them as being life forms. We prefer to define human in an all-encompassing manner. A human is a being of whatever form that shares the common bonds of love, compassion, hope, faith, happiness, all those wonderful facets of the human spirit that make life in God's kingdom worth living. Still, within the known universe are a number who by even a far wider definition are not thought of as human. Often they are beings of incredible advancement and knowledge, but they are utterly non-human in their customs and philosophies. Yet, they are often quite humanoid in form. Appearance deceives. This may seem to contradict a statement in the first series, about human beings on every world with life. I was referring to Alliance worlds, but neglected to note the fact at the time. Please excuse the oversight. We engage in trade and cultural exchange with them. But they have no link with us other than the physical and economic. They do not seek nor do we press them for membership. We ask once, and if they decline we go on with our affairs on that basis. The answer then is that, by our definition, there are no non-human races in the Alliance. However, your limited view of what constitutes an alien or a non-human being might cause you great discomfort or fear in the presence of many of the species that we call our brothers in the Alliance. This is one of the many ways in which your people must expand their consciousness and understanding in the coming new age. It is well to enhance the spiritual and cosmic aspects of your minds and souls, but it is vital that you accept that you are not the only species in the infinite realms of space. You are human beings with all the virtues and failings that are found in countless races throughout the known and the yet unknown universe. Many of these people, yes, they are indeed people, would be utterly beyond your comprehension, but in the wholeness of God, we are all equal, all family. In short, if on some lonely night you're traveling down a seldom used back road, and there appears in the sky a glowing object that descends to a landing in front of you, from which a strange creature exits and comes toward you, extend your hand in welcome. After all, it would be the human thing to do. Question 3. The next question is rather less weighty than the last, but life is not, after all, forever serious. It deals with the intimate subject of romance. When Corindians fall in love and seek a life together, how do we go about it? With your month of June, so long the traditional time for such matters, fast approaching as this is being transcribed, it is an appropriate moment for the topic. When the moment arrives for our betrothal, though each family may know the other chosen one very well, a very old formal process takes place. It begins at the home of the bride, with all of her family in attendance. There are what we call the old words that are spoken, not as a legal requirement, but just because in our vast, complex scientific culture we find much comfort and continuity in preserving our past. The father meets the couple at the door, and the first words are spoken by the bride-to-be. We will use Durantoro as the name of her man, and Demar as her family surname. Father, I am pleased to present Durantoro. Durantoro, I am privileged to present my father. I welcome you to my home in love and light, Durantoro. In love and light, your welcome honors me. The words are then repeated with her mother, and then with the rest of the family as a group. With this done, the young man is now accepted into the family as an integral member. About an hour of informal talk follows, usually with drinks and light snacks served by the children of the family. There is always background music, a series of ancient melodies that were composed for this formal occasion, and always played on original instruments to preserve their essence. After the hour, the family departs and the lovers follow her parents into the parlor. They are seated in the curved sofa that is a fixture in all Corindian homes. In the center is a large round table, holding a silver tray with four crystal goblets and a pitcher of what we call paratrulla, freely translated, sweet oil. The bride pours and serves, then takes her place across the table from her man, with her parents between them, her father seated next to him. There may or may not be further social conversation, but ultimately they will return to the old words, with her father speaking. Cherished daughter, you bring honor to the lineage of Demar. Your chosen one has found favor. You have made my love whole, revered father. Son and spirit, we accept you in love and light. You have made my life whole. My children, may the Infinite One guide you in all your days. Go in peace and love. With that, the couple usually will leave to be alone with their thoughts, their betrothal now half completed. The formality will be repeated at the home of the man the next day, to seal it. Such things may seem corny to a sophisticated, worldly Terran, But as you plunge headlong into the rapidly changing future, you will discover that there is much to be said for holding on to the traditions of the old ways. A race that preserves its heritage is a race that will meet the unknown with courage and comfort.